This is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haidar, coming to you from Gadigal land. And this is The Full Story. Picture this. You live in a regional Australian town. You take time off work to start a family. But when you decide it's time to return to your job, finding childcare is an impossible task. Well, for journalist Gabrielle Chan, that was her reality.
I started back working part-time and it was exactly 90 minutes door-to-door, from my door to the press gallery door. It was really hard. It's hard to get childminding places. It's hard to get early childhood education. And when they were both toddlers, I threw up my arms and said, I'm just going to stay home.
More than 9 million Australians live in areas with limited or no childcare services available. The problem is most extreme in regional and remote parts of the country. And it has a ripple effect.
Finally, people are flowing out of the cities into country towns and they're going, how long is it since you've had no childcare around here? Why can't I get a doctor? Why can't I get a bigger school? And childcare is at the heart of all of these issues.
Today, how childcare deserts are holding Australia back. It's Monday, the 22nd of April.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, my name's Gabrielle Chan. I am a Guardian Australia columnist. I was rural network editor and I have lived on a wheat and sheep farm for the last 30 years west of Canberra.
Gabby, thanks so much for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure.
You've navigated being a mother and a journalist working in regional Australia for many years. What's that been like?
Well, to tell you the truth, it's fairly fragmented. I live in a town 90 minutes west of Canberra. It's a town of 2,000 people. And when my babies were born in 97 and 99, it required a big change basically to the way that I worked. And there's quite a lot of distance to navigate as a working mother. And while I tried in the early years to combine work in Canberra at the press gallery with child rearing, it was really hard. It's hard to get childminding places. It's hard to get early childhood education. And when they were both toddlers, I threw up my arms and said, I'm just going to stay home.
Mm. If you were raising young children now living in a regional area, would it be any easier?
I'm just flabbergasted. There's been no change since I was a young mother, you know, nearly 30 years ago. I've got grey hair now and I actually thought it would be easier for my son and daughter as they start thinking about family. And obviously a lot of my neighbours and my friends that I mix with here in a small town of 2,000, we're watching our kids in some cases come home. We're watching them starting to pair up and get married and have kids. And it's still the same. I just don't understand how that is. I had high hopes as a young mother that, oh, well, this is hard now, but like this little baby, my first child was a girl. This little baby will not have to deal with this. We'll have fixed this up. My generation will have fixed this up by the time she comes to thinking about kids, if that's what she wants. But unfortunately, we haven't. And I think there's still so many structural issues when it comes to childcare in regional places.
So it's still difficult for mothers who want to return to work to find appropriate childcare services if they're living in regional or rural areas. Tell me a little bit about the concept of childcare deserts and what that means.
Yeah, so the Mitchell Institute at the University of Victoria did some research in 2022, which showed that pretty much nearly half of regional Australia's areas are childcare deserts. And what that means is there's at least 3 kids per childcare place. That obviously means there's a lot of competition for places. And when you combine that high demand with distances that people have to travel for work, and you combine it with generally lower wages in rural and regional areas, what you've got is an equation that means it's not worth it for parents to put their kids in childcare, because you have expensive places, you have long commutes in some cases, and you have lower wages. So it's just simply not worth it.
Mm. There has been a broader conversation around the importance of childcare for women, for children, but for the economy and society more broadly. And the government has moved to expand childcare subsidies. It's being urged to make other changes to improve both affordability and accessibility to childcare for working mothers. But that doesn't go to the heart of the problem that exists in regional areas, does it?
No. I mean, I think when I look around my town and I see the number of qualified women, and remember that in the last decade, women have taken over from men as being more educated in these generations, particularly millennials and down, so that's under 40. So you've got all these educated women. You've got a recognition amongst academia that early childhood really sets up kids to start school. But there's still a pretty messed up understanding of what early childhood education is. So there's still, I think, in some places, a thought that this is just babysitting, right? It's just child minding. It's not actually child minding when we talk about early childhood education. These are qualified educators that teach kids how to socialize, the early building blocks of what they're going to learn at school, so they hit the ground running when they get to school. Now, if that quality isn't there, or if the staff isn't there, then what you get is substandard quality in regional areas. Mm. In country towns, the arguments is always, oh, well, the market isn't that big. You know, there's not that many people there. So it's harder for businesses to make money. So they go, I don't want to, you know, why would I set up a business here? And childcare is not just a soft issue. It is a national issue. It's a countrywide issue. A lot of people can't get childcare. So in regional areas, it is exacerbated by a smaller demand, so businesses find it harder to set up, lower wages, and workforce shortages.
You've written about the cascading impact that a lack of childcare has on a regional community. Can you explain that to us? What impact does the inability to put your children into childcare have on working mothers, but then their surrounding community?
Well, firstly, for the individual mothers, and it is still mostly mothers that take the responsibility for child rearing and childcare, those mothers are not using their qualifications. And so when I go for a coffee on my main street, I know the teacher that I run into who can't get childcare can't get a job at the local school. I know my local school is missing out if that teacher can't get childcare. I know my local hospital is missing out if my friend, the nurse down the road, can't get childcare. It becomes a very immediate issue in a small town because we're a bit like a goldfish bowl. You can see it all on display. So the Australian Bureau of Statistics found that caring for children was the main reason why women were unavailable to start work, and that's 36% of them. But when you get to women with kids under 15, it goes up to 75%. So bearing in mind maybe a small percentage of those people want to stay home, which is totally their right and if they can afford it, but there would be a large percentage in there that want to go back to work to make use of those qualifications, to have an independent wage and all of those sorts of issues. So that's the effect on the individual. The effect on the town is that those qualifications are not being used in their schools, in their hospitals, in their shops, you know, in management, in local government services. All across the industries, women I see as these sleeping giants in regional communities. They have a capacity to increase economic development in town. And, you know, we always, like, it used to drive me insane, and you've been in the press gallery, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone would talk about childcare as if it was a women's issue. It's actually an economic issue mm-hmm. for our towns, for our states, for our country. And Australia is an outlier. In Sweden, a child has a right to early childhood education from one. And there's an expectation that women go back into the workforce. Mm. That doesn't happen here. You know, school starts at 5 in everyone's head pretty much. And anything below that is sort of catch as catch can.
Yep.
And that's going to have an impact on our economy.
Speaking of the economy, a lot of people might think that mining and farming are the biggest industries in regional Australia, but that's not actually the case. And a lot of them are dependent on women.
Yeah. We often see farming and mining as the big industries because they're the ones that get all the media attention. And obviously I've spent a lot of time talking about farming as well. But it's actually healthcare and social services, retail, so shops, education services and construction. Construction is the only male heavy industry in that list. All the rest of them are dominated by women. And when you look at the workforce stats, they are dominated by women in the cities. But when you get to regional, rural and remote areas, they are even more dominated by women. So if you're complaining that your local hospital can't get staff or your school can't get staff, it's probably because the women in your town can't get childcare. Mm. So this is a men's issue as much as a women's issue. No matter what your family looks like, this is an issue for all of the parents in the family. It's an everyone issue.
We'll be right back.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
When our parents were our age, their lives looked a lot different than ours.
Young Australians are the first generation to be worse off than our parents. And we're told it's our fault.
But is it?
Who screwed millennials?
Not one person, not one place, not one bogeyman.
We're seeing a real shift in how we talk about economic instability and whose fault it is.
I'm Jane Lee.
And I'm Matilda Bosley. Listen to Who Screwed Millennials on Spotify or your favourite podcast player.
Gabby, we know that at the moment unions representing childcare workers are negotiating with employers for higher pay. What impact could that have on the availability of childcare in regional areas? Could that improve or could it potentially exacerbate the problem?
There's no doubt that wages, low wages in childcare is having a dampening effect on staff availability. We're now getting around to the fact, teachers actually do a really important job. Who knew? Mm-hmm. You know, people understood that in the pandemic when they were teaching kids at home. Early childcare has to be considered in that light as well. So the pay will drive that. It will make, obviously, running childcare and early childhood education more expensive, but governments, state and federal, are going to have to think about how that works. And this is going to have to be a whole of country kind of conversation about how this is going to work, because you can't just go continually paying substandard wages just because governments or businesses can't cover those wages. It's just not working at this stage, and it won't work if you expand it further.
Mm. So what are governments doing to get childcare services into childcare deserts?
Well, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission report came out in January this year. They had a look at the Labor government's new sort of subsidy rates and found they were going some way to kind of meet the rising costs in childcare. But the prices for childcare were going faster than that subsidy could cover. So the Productivity Commission has got a report out mid-year, and that will feed into what childcare changes look like. So I would expect there will be some reforms, and I guess you could say, you know, given that there would be a federal election sometime next year, you would expect that there might be some new changes or new offering in terms of childcare, given it's such a big issue. Mm-hmm. There's also been select committees in Parliament that's looked at this, and it's quite a sort of philosophical report that they came out with, you know, looking at the history of work and the idea that this was a working man's paradise, literally a working man's paradise, but that work itself has changed, the nature of work, and how is all of this going to work? What is the new social contract? So I think it's that fundamental, the look that governments need to have at childcare and early childhood education. And basically that select committee said that, you know, there needs to be a really strong interlocking system of childcare if we expect people to work, and we expect, as we get better at ageing, we expect people to stay in the workforce longer. We really need a kind of big overhaul of the childcare system.
How are some communities finding their own solutions in the absence of, you know, government action to provide childcare services? What are some of the things that communities are doing?
I think communities are finding their own ways to get around the lack of availability of childcare. So you're seeing in some places, companies are setting up their in-house creches. You're seeing a decline of family daycare, which is where a person stays at home and looks after a number of children in the home. And those sorts of systems are all happening depending on where the towns are, how remote they are. There was a story recently in the ABC about a woman who runs a medical centre. She's the CEO of a medical centre. She couldn't get staff, so she set up a creche.
Should it really be left up to communities to find their own solutions?
No. Short answer, no. I think this is an economy-wide issue, and I don't think communities can be expected to find these solutions if government keep complaining that, you know, we've got an aging workforce, we've got a shrinking tax base, then this is going to have to be seen for what it is. It's as fundamental as a healthcare system. It's as fundamental as a school system. It is acknowledged around the world as the way to add productivity, the magic word productivity that we've been talking about for the last three or four decades. How do we improve productivity? Well, it is a serious productivity measure. So I don't think communities can be expected to just pick up the system and make of it what they will. There's going to have to be some government input into this along the way, state, federal and local. And I think it's absolutely a right and should be included in this new social contract.
Gabby, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Noor.
That was Guardian Australia columnist Gabrielle Chan. You can find more of her work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to her latest piece on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, who also did the sound design and mixing. Additional production by Miles Herbert. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Catch you next time.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforminghighereducation. This message was paid for by EY.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.